If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
It's an E3 edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Wednesday, June 17th, 2015. Almost that summer. Five more days. Four more.
Woo!
Alongside Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Contry. Coming up on the show today, like we just spoke about, we're going to have E3 news from Microsoft talking about the backwards compatibility, finally, for the 360 on the Xbox One. We'll talk about the Rare Replay Pack from Sony, The Last Guardian, shockingly announced to come in 2016, the Shenmue 3 Kickstarter, the Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I'll be talking about a modern game, maybe a little bit, Ghost Recon Wildlands. And then from Nintendo, lots of news like Star Fox Zero, Super Mario Maker, Earthbound Beginnings. Is Nintendo dying? Is the Wii U over? And then also we'll be talking about Nintendo World Championships, the Museum of Play, and their first entries into the Video Game Hall of Fame, as well as the Mega Man Digital Collection coming out. Before all that, though, we got to pay the bills, and we have a sponsor.
We have a sponsor?
We got a sponsor.
After nearly 2 years.
We tricked someone into sponsoring us, yeah. Loot Crate. What is Loot Crate? I like Loot Crate. I like the concept.
It is a box that comes to you in the mail with a theme.
It's a subscription-based.
Yes.
It's usually geek and gaming related.
Correct.
There's a theme each month. They've had Covert, which was like spy gear stuff. They've had Unite, which was like comic book and superhero theme that just happened.
They had Fantasy, Game of Thrones, and Harry Potter and
They've had like 8-bit retro game theme 1 month. And usually you get a t-shirt.
I think you always get a t-shirt.
So far, I've always gotten a t-shirt. And then you get a bunch of little goodies as well. And so you pay the subscription fee, and every month you get it. And you get a little magazine. Sometimes you get a comic book. It's worth it for the price, I think. I think it's worth it.
My wife gets them, actually. And she's been quite happy with them. And, you know, the thing is you always wonder, well, is it going to, you know, is it always going to be... you know, in my wheelhouse, the theme. But you know, if there's ever things that you get in there that you don't think you use, there's actually a pretty large trading community for people who will trade things from certain loot crates for things from other older loot crates.
Oh, okay.
And whatnot. And I mean, basically, any of this stuff, you know, if you don't like it, it's also stuff that you can use to, like I said, trade with people who don't have loot crates or people who have older loot crates and things like that.
Oh, very cool. So yeah, so it's Loot Crate. If you want to subscribe and show your support for the CU podcast, use URL lootcrate.com/CU podcast and use promo code Frank, and you can save. I think it's at least $2. It's about $2 you save every month of the subscription, and you can do it for 1 month, 3 months, or a year. And then I think the longer you sign up for, the bigger the discount you get. So yeah, CU podcast, lootcrate.com/CU podcast, promo code Frank, and then hopefully you enjoy your Loot Crate.
Back to your regularly scheduled program.
So, Ian, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
I like your
Dig Dug shirt, by the way.
Thank you. I was wearing my Driller one by the same artist yesterday. I like to represent the family in order. So, anyways, we're respecting our elders.
Dig
today.
Dug the next generation.
Yesterday was the young buck. In my life, just working on stuff like work and other. Things that we work on. I don't know if I talked about it last time. If I did, my current obsession is still Mahjong, and I'm very close to memorizing all the hands. And the more you play it, the more you realize it's a mixture of poker and rummy. And it's really interesting when you get into like the mind games and stuff as to how you play and know what to discard and what you should be going for. More similar to poker than I ever expected it to be.
Really?
But yeah, that's fairly fun. Now, will I ever actually find a real game to play with someone? Probably not, because it requires four people who know incredibly complicated rules. But hey, I've got tons of cheap Mahjong games that I can now play.
That sounds fantastic, Ian. I'm so proud of you.
I found a Mario-based one at Book Off the other day.
Book Off. Is that a website?
No, Book Off is a store in San Diego that sells, like, used books and whatnot, but they also have a lot of imports, so Japanese things.
We should give them as a sponsor. We should sell it.
Anyways,
sell
whatever.
Sell to them.
So we're gonna be
at Too Many Games in Oaks, Pennsylvania next weekend. That's 26th through the 28th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're gonna have we both have two different panels. I'm gonna have a Pat the NES Punk panel on Saturday. Ian's gonna have a pinball panel on Sunday, and then we're gonna do a podcast panel. We're not entirely sure of the format yet, but that panel is gonna be on Friday afternoon, and plus we'll be throwing bows and signing autographs and meeting you guys if you come out. And
snoozing by the ice machine, wearing the bucket on my head.
There's also a way to show your support for us there to sign up, but I do not have that link handy right now. But I will, if you go on thepunkeffect.com, I'll have the link below if you want to get last minute tickets. So yeah, and I also have another big announcement that'll be coming out soon for a book project. And I'm waiting on the timing, but I'll probably announce that relatively soon. If not, hell, maybe for this podcast if I feel like it. So we had E3, the Electronics Expo of Engineering. I think that's the name of it. That's not the name of it.
Electronic Entertainment Exposition.
There you go.
Jesus Christ.
Does anyone ever say exposition anymore? It's just expo. Exposition.
I think it's just expo.
Exposition has been used any, you know, probably since the World's Fair.
Right.
In 1902, you know.
To the guy who asked me if I was advertising for Canada Dry last time, it's Schweppes this time. Anyways.
No. See, a smart podcast wouldn't freely advertise. They would you know, try to cull that sort of that money from advertisers. So we had, obviously, E3. Last year we did an E3 special. We huddled together, I think, for a special podcast. And so we'll go basically in the order. Microsoft, we won't talk about the HoloLens too much. I don't think there's enough information out there. It could be interesting. It could be nothing. In the past, like I said, I'm not sold on VR. I think VR is not going to be a huge, huge thing. I think it's always going to be a gimmick when it comes to gaming.
I think there was one big thing that they announced, and I actually have some pretty mixed feelings about it, and they're not 100% positive. They're definitely not all positive here. So Microsoft's big thing that I think they announced for most people was they announced backwards compatibility. Which, for Xbox 360 games being playable on the Xbox One.
A year and a half into the system's life.
Right. So, I'm getting there. So immediately everyone's like, yay! Because, you know, if Sony announced that, I'd be like, yay, I don't have to hook my PS3 up and I do have these games I want to play. In theory, that's not a bad thing, right? Well, except for, you have to look at it a couple of ways. This is a year and a half into the system, as you announced. And had they announced this, had they done this 2 to 4 months in, it would have been a much bigger deal, and it would have made a lot more sense.
Or if they announced it when the console launched.
Yes. A year and a half in, we shouldn't be focusing on your machine's ability to play games from a generation ago. You should be focusing on the stuff that makes people want to buy your system for its ability to play new things in the future. Now, I'm not saying backwards compatibility is a bad thing. I just think the timing of that announcement is very strange. It seems like you're focusing on a backwards thing there.
Well, backwards compatibility. They want to be focusing on the fact that, obviously, the Xbox One sales, that they have picked up, but they're nowhere near what the 360 sales were at this point in time into that system's life. So maybe they're trying to, I don't know, breed more goodwill?
I think that's what they're trying to do, but it's going to be tough because... So, how the backwards compatibility is working, to my understanding, is that you put the game disc in, and it re-downloads a version of that game from the system, or from the network, to trick the system into thinking that it's an Xbox One game, while the actual game is being read off the disc in an Xbox 360 mode. What this means is your backwards compatibility, especially right now if you look at the list, is very limited. We're talking, like, some digital titles and a whole lot, like, some very, like, early launch titles.
You would think digital titles would be automatic, so why wouldn't it be?
So, what this means is Microsoft doesn't have the rights to a lot of these old titles anymore. They're not going to be able to get all these Star Wars games that were on the 360, or even anything third party is not guaranteed.
Why would they need the rights to be able to play the game?
Because you're not just playing the game off the disc. You have to download new code related to the game to play it on the Xbox One.
So it's not even like a 360 emulator on an Xbox
One. Well, it is, but it also requires something on the Xbox One side in a download, and it's not like a patch. It's actual new code because it's a very complicated process. So they would actually need new stuff. They would need permission, essentially, I'm guessing, from these other companies to make this actually happen. So what... Here's my thinking on backwards compatibility. I had a backwards compatible 80-gig PS3, okay? That was the first one I got. I got it from Luna. I got home, popped a game in, game didn't work. Popped another game in, it worked. Popped a third game in, it worked, but it was buggy as shit. And I said, fuck this, I'll just hook up my PS2 if I want to play PS2 games. And I exchanged my 80-gig one for a slimline one that only played PS3 games. If the backwards compatibility isn't 100% or close to it, to me that doesn't matter. I'd rather just keep the old system around and use that, because if I'm still gonna have to pull the old system out to play certain games anyways, then that doesn't mean a whole lot to me.
Looks like via IGN when it comes out, it'll be over. What is this? Over 100 titles that will be able to be backwards compatible.
Okay.
Publishers will need to get the permission for games to work.
This is absolutely ridiculous. There are publishers who aren't around anymore. So, look, I'm not trying to shit in anyone's pasta.
There's only about 25 titles right now.
Right now, yeah. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer or any of that, but it really they're deceiving you.
If this was a 360 emulator, there was no reason for they would need permission again. This is something cobbled together.
Yes.
This is cobbled together, like you said, with Xbox One code to make it work.
Cobbled together so bad that they need publishers' permission to do it because they need new code to make these things work. So you're not going to see a lot of the games that you want to see on there. Because you will see your Microsoft exclusives and your first-party titles. So you're going to see your Rare titles, your Microsoft titles, and maybe select others.
Because why would third-party publishers do this? Especially if maybe their game's for sale on the Xbox One or PS4. They'd be like, no.
Yeah, they're not going to get anything.
We're losing out on
it.
Sales.
Yeah.
Or maybe they'll have to pay... Or maybe they'll demand money from Microsoft in order to give the code up.
Right.
Which would make Microsoft not want to do it. So some of the games, we're not going to go through all of them, but some of the bigger ones, I guess, Alien Hominid HD.
That's download title. I don't think it was ever on a disc.
It's here. Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie. Battle Block Theater.
Which also were downloads. That's the weirdest fucking thing. These
Defense
are downloads.
Grid, Geometry Wars Evolved, Hexic HD, Jetpack Refuel.
Downloads!
Here's a first party one, Mass Effect. Just the first one.
There you
go. I don't see two.
And then cameos on there. I know that's disc-based.
I don't see Mass Effect 2 or 3 on here yet. Perfect Dark, Perfect Dark Zero. Those were downloads, correct?
Perfect Dark Zero was not Perfect Dark was.
Okay. Super Meat Boy.
Download.
Sure, download. Toy Soldiers.
Download.
Viva Pinata.
Disc-based. Close to launch title.
This will be a popular one. Zuma.
Yes.
Woohoo! So, this sounds like... I hope. Did they reveal at the E3 conference the list in front of people?
No.
I love to see the cheer and be like, just what the, you know, like what's going on?
It's a mess. Something was announced at the Microsoft press conference that I did sort of impress me. Rare is really. I'm not even a huge fan of Rare, but
we know your hatred of Rare.
Yeah, that's well known. especially if you've watched the Nintendo marathons. Rare made some garbage back in the day. But Rare is releasing a replay pack on Xbox One for $30 with 30 games on it. That's $1 a game, and it's going as far back as like some of their NES titles, like Snake Rattle and Roll and RC Pro-Am. Both really fun, by the way. Those games I do like. And then there are such popular ones as Conker's Bad Fur Day, which will sell the fucking package on its own. And then you get some of the newer... What was the newest one? I think... I think Perfect Dark Zero's on there.
Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts.
Bolts, Perfect Dark Zero.
Viva Pinata. Jetpack Refueled.
So, that's really great because I loved during the PS2 and Xbox and GameCube era that you got all these Namco museums.
Or
and
Midway.
Midway and all these companies put out SNK Arcade Classics. They put out these great bundles and you
Neo
got
Geo.
Bang for your buck. That's what I'm saying. You got bang for your buck. And in the PS3 and 360 era, they suddenly realized, well, there's no value to us doing this when we can piece these out for $5 a piece on download services. Now, Namco did do a pretty cool one for the 360, but its print run was almost invisible. So this is nice to see a company, love them or hate them, go back to being like, tell you what, we're just going to give you all these damn games and for $30.
This is a really cool idea. Not just because
I hope it sets a precedent.
And this is cool because this is going across multiple generations of consoles. Usually when these come out, it's just all arcades, or if it's, say, the Activision anthology, it's all like the Activision games that were on
Atari.
Yeah. Or the Intellivision anthology or games from... This is going back... This is literally over 25 years of games.
Yeah, so
this goes back to the arcade, NES... You know, the games I haven't even heard of, like Cameo Elements of Power.
That was a launch title for Xbox 360.
What's cool about this is that this is the first time I can remember that you have a compilation pack being put out on a competitive console that has Nintendo games on it.
Sure.
That's really cool that you're doing this. And Nintendo's probably not pleased, but they can't do anything about it. You know, the fact that you have a Slalom on here, an RC Pro-Am, and Cobra Triangle, and Snake Rattle, and Roll, and Digger T-Rock, and Solar Jetman, and Battletoads, and RC Pro-Am 2. That's really cool.
And things like RC Pro-Am 2 are really expensive on the NES, and it's a good game, so now you get to play it on, you know, this pack for cheap.
The first time I've heard of this being on a home console, Battletoads Arcade.
Yeah, actually, wow.
Which is a really good game.
It's the best version of a really shitty game.
it's a good game.
Yeah.
Getting Killer Instinct Gold, which is a fine port of combination of 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having that. Blast Corps, Banjo-Kazooie. This is Conker's Bad Fur Day. We'll talk about maybe in a few months if that affects the value of that game and brings it way down. It could.
It really could.
There's a chance. Perfect Dark Zero is a good game. This is...
Perfect Dark Zero was awful.
But this is a good package to get, but it's only on Xbox One. I mean, that's sort of deflates.
Yes.
It's like, ah, man.
Rare is Microsoft at this point. I mean,
sure. I understand that. But it's just sort of like, not even 360 as well. They're really trying to separate it finally a year and a half in to try to get people not to buy 360 anymore.
But, like, it's such a good deal that even with my disdain for probably 50% of the titles, I would buy this if I had an Xbox One. And like I said, I really hope other companies go back to doing these combo packs and realizing that people aren't going to pay $5 for a one-shot of Galaga anymore. You know? I mean, go back to the compilations.
So, check back with us, and we'll just say September. Then again, no one owns an Xbox One enough to really affect the price of a Conker's Bad Fur Day, but that's the big one on here, that and RC Pro-Am 2, that could see a drop in value. On the used price of it.
You're an even bigger Xbox One hater than I am, and I just watch them gather dust in my store all day long.
Hey, all I know is that I don't know anyone that owns one. No. I just don't. So not, but this is cool, and we'll see. Well, but you know what? It's not on this compilation.
Where is he? Little Danny. Little Danny Sullivan.
Little Danny Sullivan's Indie Heat.
That's not. Is that Rare?
It's Rare.
No.
It's Rare.
All right.
Trade West Sports publish it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Same way RC Super Off-Road.
Well, and Battletoads is published by Trade West, too.
So, we'll overlook this for now. We'll overlook this. This is probably on, like, sort of any of the PS2 compilations. I think I'm maybe sure it wasn't. RC Pro must have been on... No, excuse me. Off-Road must have been on some of the compilations on PS2. No? Did that make it on any?
I don't think so. Anyways, rolling right along over to the Sony press conference, which had some pretty impressive surprises.
Lots of
impressive surprises.
Surprises.
Whether they're going to be your cup of tea is different, but taken as a whole, it was probably the most surprising conference. Starting things off, and geez Louise, I got kind of teary-eyed watching it. The Last Guardian is not dead. In fact, it's supposedly coming out in 2016, and to me, it looks as fun as ever. It also looked very similar to the previous trailers we've seen for it.
It looked like, the trailer from 2007.
But 2009. But I'm just happy it's coming out. It looks great. I've liked the other games that studio has done. Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, and this is supposed to be the third and last one in a very loose trilogy, and I'm just I can't wait to see it. The gameplay to me looked very natural. There's one spot where it shows him, shows the boy jumping to Tico after he pushes that that weird like stained glass eye thing off. And earlier in that demo, they show the boy jumping, and Tico reaches down and grabs him with his mouth. And in the other section, where things are crumbling, he goes to jump, and Tico goes to grab him, and it looks like a canned animation, and he misses, and he's falling. But what you don't take into account is the tail swinging underneath, and he grabs onto the tail. So it, like I said, I don't know if organic or realistic is the right word, but it doesn't look like there's these set mechanics necessarily. It looks like you can kind of work with what's happening in the environment. You know, the fact that he can miss you, but you can still grab the tail and climb up his back.
Well, I mean, we kind of predicted it, at least when it was a minor story a few months ago, that Sony re-upped the trademark for Last Guardian. The only reason they would do that if the game was going to come out still. Well, otherwise, why would you protect the trademark? I think this is cool. Obviously, that it was vaporware, and it still is until it comes out, as far as I'm concerned. My big concern is that this is a game that's been developing since 2007. We first saw it a couple years after that. So we saw gameplay footage that, for all intents and purposes, could have been the same shit they've had for 6 years laying around.
I think it looks a little bit better.
But it's the same environment of all the videos we've seen going back years and years. And that sort of decrepit, raised up, like the bridges, that shit's the same stuff.
That's going to be the entire environment.
Oh, see, I didn't know that was going to be the entire environment.
Just like in Ico, you spend the entire time escaping from one large puzzle-filled castle. In this, it's basically you're escaping with the Guardian, with Tico, from a crumbling tower. I mean, that's how these games work. And
you're not going to be flying with him at all? At all?
I'm done.
He's got wings.
Yes.
So the bullshit thing about this, besides you're in one environment, is going to be the fact that this is only going to be on PS4, not PS3. This bothers me just because I knew people that had a PS3 that were so stoked for this game to come out. Way back when they first talked about this, when I was in New Jersey still, living in New Jersey back in like 2007, 2008, when they heard about this, they're like, oh, this is going to be fantastic. PS3 exclusive. Then they push it back to, 2011. Then they fucking cancel it. Then they might murmur as it comes back. Then they say it's canceled again. Then last year they say, no, we're still developing it. So this isn't going to be on PS3, it looks like. And it could be on PS3. There's no reason why it couldn't be on PS3. They want to push aside the PS3. These companies want to push aside their old consoles. But I think it's a disservice to the fan base that's been waiting for this forever.
They need to move forward in the fan base. The fan base who wants it has a PS4.
Not everyone.
And I'm getting tired of the argument that they shouldn't make a cut. You need to make a cut at some point so you can actually show people why they bought a PS4 and show them the power. And you say it looks like a PS3 game, and it does in spots, but that does not mean it's not going to get pushed and polished before it's released.
Well, then I would say you want to show people the new console reason to own it, then you do a current-gen game, not a previous generation game that's been around for 7 years in development. Excuse me, 8 years in development. To me, that's the wrong approach. That's like saying, okay, we're going to save Duke Nukem Forever for the Xbox One. We're not going to have them come out in 360. It's like, why would you do that? You've been developing this thing forever.
Yeah, but then by that argument, it should have come out on all the old PC systems that it was being developed for back in the day.
No, because it's just the current... The one that's... PS3 is not dead. You can still buy PS3 games. They're still making PS3 games. They're still making PS3 systems. They still are. And plus, you could buy Duke Nukem Forever for PC. So it was the same PC. It was the same platform. We're going to get technical with me.
All right, let's talk that super nitty-gritty. So let's talk about the next
game
you'll
be upset about. You got nitty-gritty with me first.
Because Shenmue 3 is coming out, but it's not coming out on the Dreamcast, so that sucks. this is one of those announcements, because I haven't really done more than dip my toes into the Shenmue universe, that... It excites me because I'm so happy for the fan base. This is a fan base that's been super vocal about a game made by a guy, you know, Yu Suzuki, who's also been super vocal about his passion for it, and nothing has ever met up. And now they did it. They can do it. And they announced the Kickstarter, which, I'm going to be honest with you, is kind of weird to me that they would announce... I mean, why... I'm not sure why Sony didn't just back it.
Sony announced it at their presentation. Really fucking strange.
Yes.
Obviously, you're going to get everyone excited for by doing that. Really strange. Really strange.
But, of course, it served its purpose. It got the damn thing funded in less than 24 hours.
We're at $3.1 million right now with 29 days left.
Yeah, and it needed two. So that's exciting. You know, for everyone who likes Shenmue, I'm happy for you. I would love it. I would love it if with this happening, they could find a way to just give me a digital version of 1 and 2 so that I can get back, I can get into it and understand why I want, you know, people want this so
bad. So obviously Sony has a stake in this at this point.
Yes.
This is not going to be on Xbox, I assume.
I believe it's, I think it's a PC and PS4 exclusive, but I could even be wrong about that.
It's PC and PS4.
Okay.
So, Mike, obviously Sony would have the money to bankroll this themselves. They're a billion-dollar company. So was my question then is, was this them hedging their bets? Was this free publicity for a game that maybe most of the audience wouldn't have heard of, but just seeing the excitement of people in the crowd, obviously they'd have more of a stake in this than the average person at home. The average 18-year-old would be like, who cares about this game? You know what I mean? That's following gaming news. Was it a combination of that? Was this just sort of... Was this money not even necessary to create the game in its entirety? Maybe it was just giving Sony faith that they should fund it beyond this point, to a point to release it? These are questions I would like answered, because I think this sets a really weird precedent in the future. But I've talked about it before, about, hey, if Capcom has any inclinations about releasing a Mega Man game and they're scared a little bit, if they did a Kickstarter and raised the money in a day, then they should do that.
All right.
I have no problem with doing that. But this isn't, you know, this isn't Capcom. This is Sony. This is totally different to me. This is a company that this isn't their property. This isn't something that they've canceled games before. This is a franchise that has been around, what, 15 years at this point? When was it?
14? Yeah.
Okay. So 15 years. So it's just strange to me that they would use that sort of platform to do that. And then at what point does Sony come in and take control in some way, or are they going to keep totally hands off? These are questions I think need to be answered. Because obviously there's a little tit for tat going on if they allowed and wanted this to be advertised at their press conference.
I mean,
besides it just being exclusive.
I mean, I feel like Yu Suzuki could have launched a Shenmue 3 Kickstarter without Sony, and it would have been funded in just the same amount of time with how rabid that fan base is. But it might have been a scratch my back, I scratch yours. You announce at the press conference and keep it exclusive, and we guarantee that, you know, your Kickstarter is going to be funded and, you know, 18 hours or whatever the fuck it took.
Because we're at almost 40,000 backers right now. Let's assume that 95% of those are for the game. About 95% of those are for the game. Let's just say then the way these usually go, this will probably triple at most. Say you have 100, let's just say, even you say 140,000 people end up buying this via the pre-order. Would that have been enough on its own for Sony to put in millions of dollars into the development of a game like that? 140,000, that's on the low end probably for a modern game that with that much money versus independent game where not as much money is going in. For them, this is probably good faith to say, okay, now we can back this going forward. That's the way I'm looking at it. Otherwise, again, why would they, unless they just really like the guy and just want him to promote the game at E3.
Let's continue Good Feels Nostalgia Fest at the Sony conference, and they did it. Fans did it. I mean, fucking, I think it's hilarious because Square always staunchly said they would never do this. But the Final Fantasy VII Remake is finally happening. And you know what? Final Fantasy VII was never my favorite RPG. I'm just going to be honest. It's fun. I enjoyed it. It was a very special game at a certain time.
Help sell that system like no tomorrow.
Yeah. But, you know, I watched the trailer and I started off and I was kind of jaded. And as I'm watching the trailer towards the end, those fuckers get you. They start creeping the original intro music in, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh no, I'm going to cry. And I mean, I will play it. I mean, there's no reason I won't play it. And I think there's 1,000 gamers, multiple thousands of gamers, who it might not be their favorite RPG, but it's this remake is going to be a bit of an event, I think.
I don't have a stake in this just because I remember watching my friend Chun Yu play it on the PS1 probably back in like 96, 97. I remember watching him play it, and watching someone play an RPG is sort of like the most boring experience ever. But I think this is strange to me just because this is an RPG you're remaking. This isn't an action game. This isn't a first-person shooter. The game elements from an RPG made now versus 20 years ago are exactly the same, and you don't need modern technology to do it. It's all numbers and math and text. That's what an RPG is, you know. So I think for people to get... You can get excited for something like this, but at the end of the day, what you're getting excited for is seeing prettier cutscenes with modern technology versus seeing polygons from 20 years ago.
A lot of people...
And voice acting versus not. I mean, that's basically what you're getting out of this.
A lot of people play RPGs for the story, and what you can do with modern machines easier than you could do back then is give it more of a movie or an anime-type vibe, feel, experience as you play through it. There's also no guarantee that all the systems are going to stay exactly the same. They have said that it's not going to be a simple remake. You know, most of the story, you know, major plot points are going to be there, including Wall Market, which I think is hilarious. But, I mean, no one... And that this is something that can make or break it. It's not exactly something I'm excited about. But when they say no simple remake, what does that mean? How are the battle systems changing? What are they going to do to it? So that could have a very big effect on the reception when it comes out.
I think this is interesting just because this isn't... Basically, is this still Square Enix?
Yes.
That owns this? Are they basically throwing in the towel saying, all right, we've had 10 Final Fantasy games since then, and we can't come close to recapturing this?
Well...
Is that part of it?
I don't know. I mean, I hate 8, but a lot of people love it. 9 I love. I mean, that was a good one. Type Zero came out, and it's good. But I'm not going to lie. They were always, like I said, very staunch. They weren't going to do it. Then years ago, they started to slip a little bit like they might, and then I just think Fan Outcry got to the point where they're doing it. But the timing is interesting. It's not like Square Enix has a ton of money. This will print them money. So not only is the timing right for fans, they've also said they wanted there to be better technology. That's why they didn't do it on the PS3. Now they have a PS4 and an Xbox One, so they can make it as shiny as they want to. And hey... Oh, it also has the added benefit of filling their coffers.
Yeah, it'll do that. I just hope this is going to turn out like the Psycho remake, which was like shot for shot and it was terrible. You know what I mean? Like the thing about remakes is that you're always going to have that. The feeling is never going to match the original for nostalgia purposes, for the fact that it was new and fresh. So even if you have lifelike looking characters and models. You will enjoy it, but you're still not get that pure enjoyment that you got from seeing those simple polygon characters 20 years ago. So I just think it's a strange feeling that since I'm not emotionally invested in this, I'm interested in seeing the reaction. Some people are not going to like that as much. Some people say this is awesome. You'll have some people that fall in between. I'm trying to think that if I would want to invest, if I had a property I would like from 25 years ago come back with this sort of polish and shine, would I be excited or hesitant, or would I be scared that it would mar or some way change my love of the original? I mean, these are questions that you can talk about with movies and I guess now with video games, since we're seeing more and more remakes. And again, this isn't like a Halo remake with getting new servers and new maps and updating it. This is literally, you're basically remaking a story. That's basically what you're doing. So we'll see what happens. And is that next year or this year?
I think that might have been 2017, but it's definitely...
Holy shit,
it's
really?
Definitely not this year.
Wow, the Star Wars movies... come out in less time.
I could be wrong about that, but it's definitely not this year.
I'm going to talk about... People say, Pat, you don't like modern games. You don't keep up with it. I do a little bit. I don't have time to play a lot of them. I'm a big fan, though, just to keep in track of... we'll put the Vegas series aside, but the Tom Clancy series, going back to the original Rainbow Six. I've read the book. The book is great. Check it out. It never did a movie of Rainbow Six. Anyway, Rogue Spear. I loved Rogue Spear. That's my idea of, you want to play modern warfare video games, is that. Now, obviously, something like this one coming out, Ghost Recon Wildlands, is not going to be as realistic as going back and playing Rogue Spear and getting shot twice and being dead. But it's interesting that this hasn't really been done before, where you have the Tom Clancy world and you're going to have an open world in South America, and you basically have to take down drug cartels. This is like... It's strange. It's not like... It's like a paramilitary sort of group, kind of pseudo... doing it on their own. No government's telling them to do it. They're sort of operating on their own, almost like, I guess, like an IMF Mission Impossible thing, where they're probably very loosely related to a government force. And so you have 4 players co-op, and you get missions to take down cartels, but you can do them in multiple ways. You can do them like head-on, you can do stealth. The example they had in the trailer was going to basically to, I guess, one production place and then going head-on and trying to overtake it with force, doing one stealth at night, doing one very smartly where you kidnap... This to me is the cool part of the game. This will show the branching, I guess, story that can be involved in an open-breathing world. They kidnap the Coke, They leave the guy. There's a guy with the white hat, I guess, is running the operation. One mission, they snipe him and take him out. But they figure, during the narration of the trailer, that it'd be better if you basically have his superiors turn against him, thinking he's a traitor. So there's one mission type you can do is you kidnap the Coke with the truck running off the road, and so then he goes back to his superiors, and basically he thinks he's a traitor or something else, and then they torture and kill him. So that to me is great, because it's not just, oh, take out this guy, take out this guy. If it really allows you that sort of open freedom to go about taking down a cartel in as quote-unquote as realistic way as you can, that's how you would do it. You wouldn't just use pure force. You would try to turn the underlings against them, or try to make it appear that it's a fractured, splintered group. You know what I mean? Or try to work informants. Or, you know what I mean? So that to me is fascinating, because that really has been done before to that extent.
With these open world games, it's always interesting to me, though, how well is this going to work? Because it's easier to give you multiple ways to complete a mission. It's harder to figure out how the layout of the world changes after you do these missions in different ways.
I mean,
you've always got to wait and see, because that does sound interesting, but
I'm taking open world to mean that it has to do with first military shooter set in a massive and responsive open world. That's how it's being advertised from Ubisoft. I'm taking it as you're going to have a cartel react to you how you're doing it. Maybe at first not realize what's going on because you're not using overwhelming force. But once they realize what's going on, they'll try to figure it out and come after you. Maybe eventually set traps. This to me is fascinating. This isn't going to be do A mission like in Grand Theft Auto, do B mission, do C. This is going to be, we're going to have to work our own method here and work around, especially using friends. This is going to be cool. I love the idea of anything like this that gives you real freedom, because obviously you've had this in games like Elite, where you can do whatever you want to some extent, but like I said, this hasn't happened to this extent. There hasn't been a Call of Duty open world. This to me sounds like there's a little bit of thought put into this. Usually I don't get excited about shooters like this, but this is at least a little bit thought out to be something different, and we'll see if it delivers. I mean, that's all I can say about it. Before I begin,
let's ruffle some feathers.
I thought that here's the thing. I wasn't on Twitter. I watched the digital presentation. I thought it was fine. Nintendo's presentation. Obviously, the big ones, everyone predicted and knew that they were going to announce a new Star Fox game. You have Star Fox Zero come out. It looks fantastic. Obviously, why wouldn't it look fantastic?
But that's not a new announcement. People knew that already.
But it's the first time you're seeing it, and they're explaining the game.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I don't see why E3 has to be, we don't see the game at all until this point, especially for Nintendo, but we'll get into that. So they showed off Star Fox Zero. It looks cool. Digital event was cute, because you had them change Miyamoto and Reggie, and it wanted to change into the puppets. That was really cute.
Yes.
It looked like Muppets. So Star Fox Zero, you can change your R-Wing into the tank, I believe.
And from a walker, I believe, as well.
So the tank was in the GameCube version, right? But the
64 version.
Was it the 64 one?
Yeah, I believe so.
But the walker wasn't. And then there's also like a little hovercraft sort of, like a helicopter sort of thing where you can hover. So that's cool. Otherwise, it's going to be probably similar to the past Star Fox games. They did explain that there was elements from Star Fox 2, which was completed, never came out with Super Nintendo, that they wanted to put into this game. That's cool. They're going back to that. Hell, I still think they should release Star Fox 2 in some form. That would be great.
Right.
You know what I mean? Why not put it on for a digital download? So I had no complaints with that. Super Mario Maker, obviously, this isn't the first time we're seeing it, but this was sort of their mark. That and Star Fox Zero were sort of their marquee games to show off.
I cannot wait for Mario Maker.
I think it looks incredible.
Mario Maker is exactly what I love. It's why I like Little Big Planet. It's why I really wanted Mega Man Universe. It's why I used to mess around with simple game creating programs like Click and Play. Just give me the assets and let me go nuts. Like, I can't wait to... And more important than making them, because I'm never going to make a goddamn good level in that game, I just can't wait to see the sinister levels people make with it and then try to beat them.
It's not just that. They're doing things that you haven't seen in Mario games, for like getting helmets.
Yeah.
Of other like
Buzzy Beetle helmets.
Yeah. Stuff like that. There was one cool thing that it showed, like, wow, let's put a Goomba in water, see what happens. They're trying to float around and they have no idea what they're doing.
Or I think in the one trailer where the guy, for whatever reason, no reason, makes the wall of the rotating fire things, and it just looked cool as shit.
Oh yeah, and of course they showed this off for Nintendo World Championships that we'll get into. I also like the fact that you can switch between the 8-bit era versus what 16-bit versus the modern, how it looks.
Yeah, you can go through a you can go all the way from 8-bit up to new Super Mario Brothers Wii U.
So I guess on the newer ones you can do the wall jump. I'm not sure if you play the old version they'd put the wall jumping in for the older versions, if they would include that or not.
Well, it was a glitch originally in there, right?
What's that?
Wasn't that originally a glitch in the original ones, being able to wall jump?
You can't wall jump in the original Super Mario Brothers. I mean, I'm talking literally like Ninja Gaiden, like jump from one wall to the other.
Oh, okay.
Like stick and rebound off of. So I'm not sure about that. But otherwise, it looks pretty cool. Now, obviously, you had people that were upset due to the quote-unquote lack of big titles. I thought there was a nice range that they showed off for both systems. Obviously, they were all killer titles. There was no new Metroid game, for example. That was probably the big one. Obviously, Zelda was pushed back. Now, Zelda being pushed back tells me two things. It probably tells me that it's not going to be available to play this year in any capacity. Otherwise, they would have announced it. I'm probably going to say the earliest you're going to see that will probably be before E3 next year. Sort of like a Splatoon release. That'll probably be the very earliest you'll see. It'll be like May of next year. The earliest. If not, you're going to look at it after E3 sometime later summer or fall. I don't have a problem with them pushing back a Zelda game. If they want it to be perfect, take as much time as you need. Take as much time as you need. Now, there's some people, though, that are saying that this tells us that, oh, Zelda's not going to come out on the Wii U, and it's going to come out in the next Nintendo system. And I think there, for some, I don't know where that train of thought comes from. I don't know why they would do that. Nintendo's had a Zelda game in every system. Like, why would this be any different? Just Zelda was the one of the first games during the tech demo that I was at back in 2011 for the Wii U. They showed a Zelda tech demo before they changed the look into more of the cel-shaded. It looked more like the last one on the GameCube.
Twilight.
It looked more like Twilight Princess before they changed it. So you're gonna get your Zelda game. They're just not confident. They don't want to announce it. Nintendo doesn't like announcing stuff 2-3 years out. They want to do it to know exactly when it's coming out, you know, within a year. That's basically probably what their strategy is for that.
This would be my concern. Mario Tennis is a new announcement, and it looks good. I absolutely love Mario Tennis games, and I love the Mario Golf games. I wish they would announce one of those for that system, too, although the handheld one's just fine. Animal Crossing Happy Homemaker for the 3DS looks neat. I'm not so much into the Amiibo Fiesta one that they're doing for Animal Crossing. I believe it came out today that it's going to be a free download, but requires Amiibos to play.
Okay.
I'm not so crazy about the constant reliance on Amiibos.
If it's a budget title, I wouldn't have a problem. If it was like a $5, $10 title.
It's a free download, like I just said.
Then it's fine.
Because you're
paying for the Amiibo to play it.
I'm going to buy an Isabelle Amiibo anyways, but I just... How hard are these going to be to come by? I that's worrisome. Anyways, whatever. That's not my main point. A lot of the Wii U stuff that they showed is still just bigger reveals of stuff that they announced last year. Like the Star Fox was known last year, and the Mario Maker. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of forward thinking stuff that was announced. Meaning, I think a lot of people are scared because it doesn't look like there's. Literally, they can't see much into the future. Now, I will counter that. Nintendo has never really relied on E3, not in past years. They've relied on their Nintendo Directs. And their Nintendo Directs have announced plenty of big things and conveyed tons of information to their, you know, loyal fan base. So, I don't think it means that it's game over for the Wii U. I really don't. But I do understand the concerns about a lack of software. Last year was a great E3 for Nintendo, and they showed off tons of stuff. And, you know, the last thing that they showed off that people, you know, that people got excited about just came out, Splatoon, and everyone loves it. This year, it's just like, yep, we still have these games coming, and here's a couple small ones on the side. So I understand concerns, but like I said, I still don't think that means the Wii U is dead.
I think people have to remember, though, that the 3DS is just as important to Nintendo as the Wii U. And so they got to split their time and energy with that as well.
Yes.
And put out... Because the 3DS is dominating still. And so they cannot ignore that. So, but still the majority of games were... I'd say it was like 60-40 Wii U from what I saw. Obviously, you had people bent out of shape because of the sense of entitlement. I guess because they were upset that there was a Metroid Prime space games... sort of thing coming out in 3DS, but not something announced for Wii U. They went on and they downvoted the trailer like, significantly.
They signed a petition to get it not released. It's like these people forgot that Metroid Prime Pinball doesn't, or Metroid Prime Pinball doesn't exist. Metroid Prime has had spinoffs before.
Why are they insulted? They don't have to buy the game if they don't
exactly.
like it.
Yeah, exactly.
You're fucking babies.
I actually like weirdly themed sports games, so I will probably buy that day one.
If that's the case, then we never would have saw Mario Golf, if that's going to upset you. You know
right.
what I mean? Like who cares? The other thing people have to realize, like Ian said, what happens in the fall? What if they announce a Metroid game in the fall, Nintendo Direct, and people at that point be like, okay, that's fine.
We have Tokyo Game Shows coming up. I mean, Nintendo can announce things there.
Nintendo, unfortunately, to their detriment and to their benefit, goes by the beat of their own drum.
Yeah, they don't really...
They don't give a shit about you and your schedule.
They don't run on an E3 schedule.
They don't, which probably means less pressure to get things out. It lets them probably focus on one or two big things at a time. Because, trust me, they wanted to probably show Zelda. Obviously, they know that they showed off footage last year, and this year so far has been, okay, we got to take a step back. Maybe they came across something that's bothering them, or maybe it's another direction. An open-world Zelda game, that should get you excited, but it's going to take time. I also want to comment on people that thinking that because Nintendo didn't have a billion huge Wii U titles, that the Wii U is going to be abandoned in a year. I think you're out of your mind. I think that's being a little bit too... The sky is falling. Every Nintendo console has had at least 5 years lifespan before new ones come out.
Right.
It's usually closer to six. So why would the Wii U be any different?
It's not like the... Here's the thing. A lot of people are worried about the looming specter of the NX. I don't see that being released until into 2017. So
at the earliest, late 2017, I'll probably say 2018.
So even if the Wii U does have a shortened lifespan, you're looking at like
2.5 years.
I would say at minimum year and a half
before they start to plan to phase out.
Yeah.
But that means you're going to get a Zelda game. You're going to get at least every year, and you're going to get one big first party. Like you'll probably get the Metroid.
I'm going to end my time with the Wii U happy whenever it ends. I've had a blast with all the titles I've played so far, and there's going to be good ones in the future. So
I think it's funny that they're announcing the death of it. They announced the death of it within the first year. Before, I always said, like you said, wait till Smash Brothers. Wait till Mario Kart.
They've been announcing the death of it every year.
We've said that, though. Wait till Mario Kart and Smash comes out. If it's a failure then still, then okay. But guess what? Those sold a ton of copies. Splatoon has sold a ton of copies.
What, rumored so, like half a mil or something like that so far?
So if they come out with even two big first-party titles, not counting something like, you know... People are looking past stuff. I know Xenoblade is not a huge, huge franchise, but...
No,
people,
it's huge.
Not Splatoon big, but it's still popular. It's going to... They're going to sell. They're not going to say... If they threw in the towel now, if Nintendo said, okay, we're done with this console, that would be horrible for the next console, because then people are going to say, what, you're going to get rid of this console after 2-3 years? Why would I get it? You can't do that with home consoles.
Yes.
It's not an experiment for Nintendo. They're not losing money here. They can look at the Wii U as a loss leader. Hell, they can look at it as a loss leader for selling millions of amiibos themselves, and they'll still come out with the system just for that. Because, you know what I mean? So there's absolutely no rationale to think that they're going to abandon their current console after only 2.5 years. If this was 3.5 or 4.5, you could tell me that, okay, yeah, there's nothing huge coming out. Okay, Star Fox, we knew it was coming out. Again, though, were they playing it? Could you play it? No. So, Zelda will at least be announced next year. They'll probably announce one other big one like Metroid, or what's another big one? People are maybe saying F-Zero, even that wouldn't be a major one, that still would be cool to see.
I think a lot of people, including myself, were thinking they were going to do... they're going to take Animal Crossing, a more traditional Animal Crossing, but in a new direction. But, I mean, whatever.
Pokemon Wii U? Is that what people want to see?
No, I think at this point people are pretty much...
Just good with 3DS?
Pokemon being on portables. I don't think anyone would object to a console-based Pokemon, especially if it had online, but I don't think... I honestly don't think there's many gamers out there holding their breath for that. Otherwise, I mean, Nintendo's had two decades to do that.
Hey, the only ones you had were Snap and, Stadium.
Well, no, and then there was XD Gale of Darkness on the GameCube, which some people like. I never played it, but it's not supposed to be like a normal Pokemon game anyway.
So we're going to predict it right now. Ian's saying, what, late 2017 for the next Nintendo console?
I'm going to say mid-2017.
I'm going to say 2018. I'm going to give him into the 6th year. I'm going to give him that. I think that they're still cracking the sort of the tech of what they're doing with this. By the way, I forgot to bring it up. On Star Fox, they're doing it, which I saw from the tech demo already 4 years ago, that you're going to be able to fly and then look to the side like you would if you're really flying. That, to me, again, that's the only, you can only do that in the Wii U, something like that. So you don't have to turn your ship in order to see what the hell's going on to the left or right of you.
Right.
Or even maybe a little bit behind you. I don't know what it's going to be. But you know what I mean? So that, to me, is really cool that they can do stuff like that on the Wii U. So I'm going to get Star Fox. I'm probably going to get... I think it's only be if it's a $30 game, it should be a great price point for Mario Maker. If it's more than that, you know,
I will pay $60 for Mario Maker.
You're glad to pay $60 for that, yeah, even though it's just a Mario Paint sort of sandbox. And
much like Little Big Planet, to me, it's an investment in the community, hoping that they make a ton of levels because that's mostly what I'm going to play. I'm not going to spend a lot of time making. I buy games like that to play what other people make.
You want to see what other people put together. Yes. I really hope for something like Mario Maker, though. My only suggestion, I hope they put something in where there's a fail-safe that it tells you if you put something in that's impossible to make a jump on. So, you know what I mean? Like, or something that, you know what I mean? It would say, okay, that probably isn't possible for you to do. You
I would have a feeling that Nintendo is on that.
They would do something like, okay, if you put it one space too far, it would tell you before
they know
testing.
Their physics, and you can probably... I'm sure if in some way or another, like, you could probably plot Mario where the jump starts, and you would see an arc where the jump ends.
It would tell you the predictability.
I'm going to guess that. I mean, if I'm thinking of that right now on the spot, I can't imagine that Nintendo hasn't.
That would just cut down on a lot of the trial and error of going back and testing it out.
That way you can make really difficult jumps without having to constantly fine-tune them.
The other thing I want to talk about, or Ian can talk about real quick, is that surprise announcement, it happened the day they announced it, I think on the 14th, that Earthbound Beginnings, which is Earthbound Zero, was released on the virtual console finally.
Yeah, this is kind of fantastic, and it goes back to what you said about them releasing Star Fox 2, although that was just a prototype. I think this is a great bone to be tossed to Earthbound fans. You know, you've got Earthbound Mother 2, you know, they put that out, and they put this one on there, which I don't think anyone saw coming. And from what I understand, it's very similar to Mother 2. Even the story is supposed to be somewhat similar. It's very grind-heavy. It's very much an 8-bit RPG. I've played bits and pieces of it through emulation, and it is. I mean, you gotta grind your ass off. But that's never bothered me. I like grinding. What I think this is saying, though, is that Nintendo has finally heard... that there are or has heard the U.S. Earthbound fan base. I think that a lot of people now have their hopes up that we will get a translated Game Boy Advance download of Mother 3, which is the one that everyone really wants to play. And I think people are now hoping that in the future, anything further Earthbound is not going to be so in jeopardy, that maybe Nintendo will actually stop kind of being dicks about it and just release it in both territories. Because how long does a fan base need to yell before... I mean, it's not like we're talking about Shenmue, you know, where like, it just wasn't in production and it couldn't happen. I mean, these things are coming out, so why not put them in both territories?
No, it makes sense. It's not costing Nintendo anything to do it, so why not just do it? It's costing you server space.
Right.
That's all it's costing. You know what I mean? Like,
and there's a perfectly good fan translation of Mother 3 out there that Nintendo even featured in an issue of Nintendo Power. So, I mean, like,
so they're probably,
you can put Mother 3 up there. I mean, you guys can do it. You can do it. I know you can do it.
They'll probably end up just paying a little bit of money and just saying, okay, we'll do it. They'd be glad to do it.
Yeah.
The people that did the translation, they want to see that.
Clyde Mandolin, I believe. Tomato was the one who did that translation.
Tomato?
Tomato. Or Tomato.
Let's talk about Nintendo World Championship.
Right.
No, first, you know what? First, we'll talk about every year at E3. People have the discussion whether it's people on the talk shows. I guess it's almost like now it's almost like sports now, where they talk about the most meaningless stuff every day. They have to, but you always have the conversation and on Twitter and fans about who won E3.
My dick.
Who won E3? Is a meaningless question.
That's why I answered the way I did.
Because you shouldn't care, quote-unquote, who won, unless you have a monetary stake in one of these companies. You honestly shouldn't give a shit.
Voting for wanting someone else to lose makes you a dick. I mean, honestly, okay, we both kind of tore into the Xbox One a little bit, but I don't care. Like, gaming is supposed to be fun, so why do you care if you're having more fun than someone else? You should want everyone to enjoy the hobby.
Or want to convince someone else they're not having as much fun as they probably are.
Right.
Oh, no, you... No, you're not having fun on that Xbox because I'm having fun on my PS4.
It's like, I'm having a lot more fun over here.
But I'm having fun playing this. You know, it's just a strange tribalistic mentality that makes little sense to me about people that saying, you know, people crying about Nintendo. Nintendo doesn't give a shit what you think as long as you're selling stuff. I mean, that's what it comes down to. They only lose if they don't make money, any of these companies.
Right.
And so far, I don't see Nintendo losing a lot of money anytime soon anymore. I just don't see it.
Microsoft impressed the Microsoft fan base. Sony impressed the Sony fan base. And while Nintendo did not impress all the Nintendo fan base, I was perfectly okay with it.
I was fine. I know that there's stuff coming out. I still have to buy Splatoon. People, it's always what have you done for me lately?
Oh my God, you do have to buy Splatoon. Jesus
Christ. I do have to buy it, but you know what?
That game is busy. I know, Pat. I know you're busy, but I'm saying it's a great goddamn game, and you should go fucking buy it.
I can buy it and not play it. Is that better? But again, going back to it, just the having analysts talk about this, like they're analyzing the NBA Finals. go Dub Nation, by the way. Love Steph Curry. It's just really just awkward, and I guess it's the point of maturing of the medium that you can do this, but I want no fucking part in any of. If someone asked me on a talk show who won E3, I'm going to just look at him with a dead stare, like you're looking at me right now. It's like why is this a question again? I mean, you have the Sony people that probably love the fact that Uncharted 4 is coming out, and it's not going to be the last one. They'll make 80 of those. And then, you know, the Microsoft unveils the Halo game of the year, and people get excited about that. You know, it's great. As long as you have stuff that you like, you won. You won as long as you enjoy it.
You did. A winner, video game players.
A winner is all of you.
All of you.
Let's talk Nintendo World Championships. I watched most of this. This was a nearly four-hour event.
I did not even.
I'm going to try to condense this into summary versus breaking it out. Very mixed on Nintendo World Championships. I tweeted all my thoughts going into it as it was going. I think, obviously, you knew this was going to be... Nintendo's paying for this event. They're paying for the Nokia Theater space. You knew this was going to be basically a long infomercial, which what it was. It was a long infomercial. That said, they could have done better presenting the competition and presenting the competitors and describing what was going on. So I'll break it down. You had 16 competitors, 8 qualified at the local Best Buys around, not local to you, around the U.S. Then they picked 8 people from the internet, 6 speedrunners. I'm not sure how they chose these people. I'll get into that later. Then they chose Egoraptor from Game Grumps, and then they chose some other guy from something I can't remember. I don't remember. Some other guy from the internet. Don't remember right now. Probably someone has 2 million subscribers. Don't care. Not the point. So the competition was interesting in that. Interesting, good and bad, in that it wasn't head-to-head against each other. It was 3 rounds. And then the 4 winners from each round moved on automatically. The top ones moved on. The bottom 4 went into the underworld to fight to stay alive. And the bottom 3 would go home. And that one person would stay alive. Okay?
Okay.
So the first round was Splatoon.
Yay!
Yay, until you have to watch it for 25 minutes straight.
I've watched it for 25 minutes.
The problem with Splatoon, and it looks like, at least to me, much more fun to play than to watch. I think...
Well, how do they present it? Because I'm trying to figure out how you're supposed to watch two teams. It's fun to watch one person.
Well, they would cut back and forth between one... I actually tweeted out my suggestion. Nintendo actually did it like 10 minutes later, which I thought was funny. They showed one screen at a time. You didn't know who the hell it was. First of all, they didn't introduce any of the competitors, which I have a huge problem with. You have people that, in some locations, probably went up against 800 other people in one, didn't even introduce them and give a chance to speak.
That's a kind of a slap in the face.
That, to me, is a little weak. Even like a game show, talked for like 35 seconds. Oh, what do you do? Oh, that's interesting. You do this. Like, you know, like Mark Summers and Double Dare would do.
I'm into my dog and beads.
Yeah. Okay, great. moving on, you know. Didn't really do that. Didn't really present who they were. You had 3 commentators at one time besides the host, Kevin Perrara, who used to be, I think he was on G4. That was a long time. Okay.
I don't know. Sure.
So he hosted. And so... they did Splatoon, and then so it was basically 4 sets of 4 teams, four on four, and 2 out of 3 rounds. And then the losers faced each other, and the losers went down to the underworld. It took forever. So you would track one person at a time. You couldn't follow what was going on. Well, that was a problem.
See, that, okay, because I want to say, like, I have fun watching people play Splatoon, but I'm trying to imagine trying to track watching four people on one team and then four people on another team. That's a mess.
They went, they finally at one point did a four-screen split screen where it was two from each team, but even then they switched off of that and went back to one-on-one. So the whole time they're explaining some of what's going on, but the problem is that I quickly learned they're playing Splatoon that while you can build up an insurmountable lead, really the last minute of the match is what matters.
Not if you're good at holding a choke point.
Well, they just went back and forth because there was multiple times during the broadcast where like, wow, looks like the orange team's out of it, and then the other team comes back and wins. And so, well, again, while it looks really fun, there it looks like there's just too much going on at one time and having to switch back and forth to truly follow what's going on with the constant firing. It doesn't seem like a good sort of, at least they proved it, wasn't good for competition to be able to do a good commentary.
No, it absolutely would not be good for a live competition where anyone is trying to watch two teams play against each other. It's a fantastically easy to follow and very fun game with a lot of strategy if it's just you, your gamepad, yes, and the TV. So, but the way you're describing it does sound like a nightmare.
It was haphazard.
Yeah, sounds like,
and plus,
sounds awful.
And plus, like, oh, that guy's doing well, and it's like, I don't know who that person is. I don't know who's on this
because
team.
You didn't introduce any of them.
I don't know. I don't have any stake in what I'm watching. I have no idea who's on the blue team, so I don't know if... You didn't mention until they lost who's on whose team. So, okay. So that was the first round. Underworld Challenge was next, where the three Underworld Challenges, again, to stay in the game, not be sent home, were all the old, quote-unquote old-school challenges. First one was, we've done this in the marathon, I beat you at it, first to get the Triforce in the first level in Zelda. The first piece of the Triforce.
No, you did that, but I don't think I ever did it.
Well, you didn't do a challenge?
No, I didn't do it back.
They just timed me.
You did it. You had to do it with chest bombs, I think, was what someone wanted you to do.
No, I thought I had like 2 minutes or something, or 2.5 minutes.
All I know is that I did not do
that. That was the challenge. Okay. It's a cool challenge. Yeah. That's where I started to really look at who are these people that they chose to be arbitrarily, because you had people grabbing freaking rupees instead of just running towards these are, if these are speedrunners, I'm not going to go through who was who. I don't know. All I know was at that point, they didn't belong there if they were doing that. But it'll get worse as I go on. So that was the first challenge. Second challenge, the second main challenge, which was really, it's like world premiere, blast ball, and the whole crowd deflated at that point. Because it's like, first of all, why is it another team game? Why am I risk of being thrown out because my teammate sucks at a game? I thought that's really strange, especially if I competed individually at a Best Buy and waited 8 hours in line. Now, the fate of my existence is because I'm playing with an asshole who sucks at Splatoon. Like, why does that make sense?
Believe me, I yell at my fellow Splatoon players with no voice chat all the time.
Are you turning into a good Splatoon player? Is that one you're excelling
Surprisingly,
at?
Surprisingly, I'm actually doing pretty good at Splatoon.
Now I want to play with you.
But Vani is insanely good.
Okay, we can once
she
again
is insanely
we can do team podcast or something. So it was Blast Ball, which is a 3DS game. The first thing I thought was this like a canceled game from Nintendo Land that they're doing? What is this?
It's an unskinned game from that Metroid game they're putting out.
That's what I thought. I was just like, what's going on? So basically, it amounts to, it was a video game version of Crossfire, board game, where you shoot at a ball, it goes into the goal.
I kind of want to fucking play that. I'm going to be honest.
It looked fine. I even tweeted, this looks fine. Doesn't belong in Nintendo World Championships. Looks fine.
Right.
Because the whole crowd was deflated. It was another, all right, let's have freaking 10 minutes of this, as now you're down to 12 competitors instead of 16 for this round, so now we got to go through multiple rounds of this. And it was just one of those things where it was like, again, I was like, okay, and the crowd didn't care. This wasn't like, I thought Star Fox would have been a cool reveal to do a mini sort of game like they did back, you know, at one of the Blockbuster Championship in the store. All right, so those losers that lost their Blast Ball game, which again looks fun, don't think it belongs to NWC. Go down to the Underworld. Second Underworld round was really cool challenge. This is the one I do not have a huge amount of experience with. This is the one I would have faltered at. Was you had to Super Metroid, you had to kill Mother Brain and escape in the fastest time.
Oh, that would have been perfect for speedrunners, ideally.
You would think that, but then two couldn't even defeat Mother Brain and died. I could have done that with confidence. Could have beat Mother Brain. Getting out, we'll see. Not to rely on my platforming, having never played a lot of Super Metroid. So two guys almost made it out, and then one made it out and won. That was actually the most exciting part of the up to the end, the most exciting part of the entire
thing. That kind of sucks, though, because it came down to the one who lived, not like you know, are we going to have, are we going to come down to a game of seconds?
Well, two didn't even kill a Mother Brain, which to me was like, well, you could even, I mean, it's not extremely hard to kill Mother Brain, is it? You could jump and shoot missiles and stuff, right? So then the two escape, and then the one was going up, the other one, and I couldn't remember if one got before one hit the lava, but one won. So basically, two out of the four only made it out. Third game, which was, should have been, I tweeted this, should have been the leadoff game. The one that in my mind should have been Mario Kart 8 was the leadoff game. Should have been the one to lead. Excuse me, was the game there? Should have been in the leadoff because it's not. First of all, you can have freaking eight people do it at once if you want to, and plus it's still individually based.
Yeah,
they did it in sets of four, which was fine. But then they did a cool thing because now you're down to only eight remaining sets of four, and then it was three races for each set, and then it was the highest number of points overall for all eight, which is probably the most fair way you can do it.
Explain that again. So three cups, you mean?
Oh no, you do three races,
three total races, just races,
just three races. For one set of four and the other set of four, and then it just compiled the number of points, and so the top, I think, four or five moved on from there. Top four moved on. Does that make sense?
So four people raced and four people raced at separate times?
Yes.
Okay.
Four against each other, then four against...
Oh, I get... Okay, that's...
They're not racing each other necessarily. They're racing for points, total points, so then the top four out of all eight moved on.
Okay, gotcha.
Which is the most fair way to do that.
Yeah.
Exciting races, they did 200cc...
Then, ooh, I'm suck at 200cc.
That's where up to this point, if I'm thinking to myself, I would have done pretty well at this tournament. To there, I'd be like, unless I fucking caught on really quickly, I would have been, if it was 150cc, I would have done well. 200, I probably would have been skid in my teeth. Probably would have taken until the second race to get used to it. Might have made it through. But I definitely would have made it through the underworld for the third one, because you know what it was? Balloon Trip.
Oh, yeah.
Is where I got annoyed and angry.
Someone actually tweeted me that, because I was like, I can do Balloon Trip. I mean, I usually flub it on the marathon, but I always do. But, I mean, I can play that, and you can, ever.
We've done it on no sleep. I've done Brank 1, not getting killed, no sleep.
Yeah.
They fucking sucked at Balloon Trip.
Uh-huh.
They were getting knocked out within seconds at first.
At seconds?
No. I'm not joking.
No.
So at this point, I'm like, okay. I understand if you never saw. I would have had probably problems with Super Metroid. I understand that. You're not going to know every single game. But to not have the competency to last even 10 seconds at Balloon Fight shows me, first of all, you never played the game before in your life.
It's like a 1.5 button game when you're playing Balloon Trip.
Second, you don't have the dexterity to master even... Not saying you got to survive all the way through. You couldn't even master for even 30 seconds or a minute to last. I'm like... Okay, I have reservations. Now I had reservations about who they chose Nintendo to show up to this competition, who they handpicked. I was sort of like, okay, I knew I could have kicked ass. So what they had to do with Balloon Trip wasn't even the one that lasted the longest. Otherwise, the game would have lasted literally 15 seconds before four of them were basically gone, just about. I think they took the highest overall score from your three-minute run. So if it was me, I probably would have died once in a minute. Then after that, would have lasted until the end. And then whatever, if the score keeps going, then that's fine.
So you can play for 3 minutes, and the highest score is the one they take.
So obviously, you don't die. You're going to score higher because you keep going, grabbing the balloons, and you get whatever 10 points a second, whatever it is, until it increases. I'm going to edit this back in. We forgot that there was Smash Brothers Melee. Smash Brothers.
Oh,
Wii U.
Right. Okay.
There was Smash Brothers Wii U before people kill us.
Jesus.
And I'll just comment on this.
It was team based, right? They did it team based.
No. It was. I think it was the top. Then it was top winners of the eight. That was right before the final knockout. The top winners score overall. But they added in something that was strange. I guess last year at the Treehouse thing, Reggie challenged in an offhand way. He said, I'm going to kick your ass to a good Smash Brothers player. So they had Reggie come out, Fizame. Crowd loves Reggie, who doesn't? And then he played against... This guy, who's, I guess, a professional, he said he's an engineer, and they had a match. So you figure, okay, this will be entertaining. They basically did it to show off Ryu being a new... It was an advertisement to show off Ryu being a downloadable character, which I can talk about that on its own, how I think that's weird. But whatever, it's cool. You can download Ryu and play him as a character in a Smash Bros. Game. The problem is that, obviously, Reggie had never played a game of Smash Bros. In his life and hadn't even prepared enough to put on a show... At there. We're talking he got knocked off and didn't know how to jump up to get back on the platform. I'm not talking he didn't know the advanced moves. I'm talking he didn't know the basic moves that you should know within playing the game for 5-10 minutes. So it just came off kind of weird. And there was a really bad, awkward moment at the end that some people got bent out of shape over. I thought it was just weird. I thought it made both this guy and Rage look bad. At the end, at the game, in a spirited, kind of funny way, This guy, probably a 30-year-old guy, said to Reggie, in front of everybody, he said, "You suck at Smash Brothers," to Reggie Fils-Aimé on stage. And the crowd's like, "Oh!" And then Reggie was taken aback, I think, honestly, and he actually said, "Well, you play video games for 16 hours a day. I basically run a company."
Oh.
Which was kind of an ugly statement to say to millions of people that play a lot of video games. Kind of sort of a dickish move from both of them. I hate to say it. I don't want to get on Reggie's bad side, but I was like, that wasn't the best way to handle a situation like that.
That sounds like a mess all around.
That was sort of... I know you wanted to advertise everything. You wanted to get every single inch of advertising space at this event that you possibly could. Squeeze every dollar out for your DLC for Smash Bros. I had no idea Ryu was coming out as a downloadable character. That was not the proper way to do that. That's just my thoughts on that. And so at this point, I sort of tapped out for a number of reasons, because obviously this was a huge advertisement for Blast Ball, but a huge advertisement for Splatoon, which just came out, even though they didn't need to advertise Splatoon. And then you were advertising, obviously, Super Mario Maker. They were really fun levels, the Super Mario Maker levels. They were fun. The guy who won, Johnny Numbers,
yeah, I did see that.
Which sounds like he's a member of the Mafia. Somewhere.
I love that name.
Johnny Numbers, right? You know, he's running the numbers in the back. Did very well. Figured out a lot of it. Some of the commentators have said looks like he's played this before, almost from how well he had the instincts for it.
Nice.
To know what probably would occur if he jumped and then knocked off one shell. He knew enough to do it. Not that the other guy was bad, but he was obviously just tops. So he wins. He gets a cool gold trophy. Runner-ups gets assigned Miyamoto 3DS. Don't really talk to the winner at all or loser. And there you go. There's your 4 hours gone from the 10 World Championships.
Well, I'm glad I didn't really tune in.
So I have issues just because they really did little to connect it to the original. Besides having the same logo, they had Thor Akerlund and Jeff Hansen, two of the winners, show up.
Thor Akerlund did show up.
They literally flashed them in the crowd for literally 4 seconds, and that was it. So they didn't really... There was no historical context that I liked. Not saying you have to dwell on the original competition, but the original Nintendo World Championships in 1990 was more of a, I want to say, I hate to be cheesy, it was a gaming and cultural celebration. They weren't games that they were showing off for the first time. They were games that the kids loved. Now, obviously, Nintendo was making money off of the Power Fest. They were charging admission to get in. But that was a different feeling than this. This was, like I said, just an infomercial. Yes, was it cool Nintendo did it? Of course it was cool. They did not have to do this. But Nintendo got their money's worth in pushing the games they wanted to push. That was the issue I had with this overall.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I'm not sure what else you can say about it besides that. I'll see you in 2040. I'll be in a wheelchair. And then, you know, maybe I'll qualify for that one.
Yeah, I just think, I guess my biggest problem with it just from hearing about it is the larger focus on team-based gameplay to eliminate some of the contenders. I don't so much have a problem with, like, Splatoon just shouldn't have been picked, as much as I love it.
No.
I'm a massive fanboy at this point, but, like, it just doesn't make any sense from a spectator perspective and the team perspective. If Blast Ball was team-based, same. Mario Kart 8 makes perfect sense.
That makes perfect sense.
And all of the Underworld challenges sound like they would have been perfect challenges for, you know, it tests individual player skill.
If you had to delegate the old school games just to being the knockout ones, the final knockout, I'm okay. I'm actually okay with that. I'm not saying, oh, they should have Legend of Zelda being a main game. But having the team-based stuff was just a killer.
Sure.
To start off that way. Again, I got to rely on you. If you suck at this game, no, I'm out. Like, how is that fair to them? How is it fair to the individual competitors? And plus, it was kind of lame. I thought this event was going to be over an hour and a half, almost 4 hours. I'm like, holy shit. It shouldn't be a half hour playing Splatoon or a half hour playing Mario Kart. You know, I mean, it should be as much as possible head-to-head, play at the same time, go.
Yeah, I figured it would be a lot snappier.
It definitely was not snappy. It was anti-snappy.
On a slightly more positive note... there's a museum in Rochester, New York, near my hometown, called The Strong, and they have a video game Hall of Fame. And I believe this is the first year that they did any inductees for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you from sitting around with Pat that even narrowing down the important games in a single year for the video game years takes forever. So I can only imagine how hard it must have been to pick what you think are the most important games to go into your first year of inductees in a Hall of Fame for video games.
It's like the first year they do it for anything. It's tough to narrow it down.
However, I honestly think they kind of knocked this out of the park. You have Pong, Pac-Man, Tetris, Super Mario Brothers, Doom, and World of Warcraft. Why do I think this is so great? Pong kind of kickstarted it. Pac-Man revolutionized it. Tetris was a phenomenon. Super Mario Brothers changed the way we looked at video games. Doom did that as well and basically brought on the first-person shooter genre. I'm not saying any of these things were necessarily the first, although these a lot the of them important. Were, but they're the most important. Yes. And then World of Warcraft, I mean, I couldn't give a shit about it, but
like or not, it's a phenomenon.
It was a phenomenon in the first truly accepted, largely played MMO.
That's still played over 10 years later somehow.
So, and then there was that was from a field of 15 finalists, which were no worse. Angry Birds, you can knock on that all you want, but that has completely changed how people game mobile.
Yeah, I would say if you look at this from a total historical perspective, eventually that would get in.
FIFA, why not Madden? Because FIFA is universally loved. Madden is only played in the United States. The Legend of Zelda, of course.
That'll get in at some point, sure.
Minecraft, obviously. The Oregon Trail, I mean, everyone's favorite educational game that's actually fun to play. Pokemon, phenomenon, but beyond just very, you know, it was one of those first... When the technology was still crude, it was one of those first very social games. You know, The Sims, Sonic the Hedgehog, and Space Invaders, the most important game of all time.
So there...
I love you, Norm.
So you have... This video game, if they do six a year, you're going to have 25 years before you start even beginning to run out of ones that, you know, you can put in there.
Yeah.
Year 15, you'll get to Civilization. You know what I mean? It'll take you that far to get in there. Or, you know... Think of King's Quest. That'll make it in at some point.
You could have splashed another five titles up there, probably.
You know what?
For
the first year, you can make an argument for the first year starting something like this. You probably should have went double to make sure you pack it in. Otherwise, people will be waiting 20 years from now. Then again, it's how widely accepted is this going to become versus because anyone can start their own Hall of Fame. But this is a brick and mortar.
Yeah, so it's a real museum.
It's a real museum in Rochester, which cold as hell in Rochester.
Not as cool as Buff.
Almost went to college air. Thank God I didn't. Yeah, I have no problem with any of these picks. Again, you know, like you said, Pong. There you go. Pong, stolen from, you know, from the brown box. But if you want to say Odyssey and Pong, put them together. Extremely important.
Yeah.
First time people are playing video games, put them in public to play. Putting the Odyssey on TV and people scratch their head. What's that? They're playing you know, TV tennis, which is Pong.
Yeah.
You know, extremely important. Pac-Man, culturally, most important game ever. First icon of video games. We talked about Pac-Man for his 30th anniversary a month ago. Tetris, first I'd say widely accepted amongst all gamers, young and old, male and female. First very portable video game that was huge.
First puzzle game that really set a mold that many followed for years, you know, with the pit-based falling block sort of game.
Super Mario Brothers wasn't the first, but firmly established a platformer and a living, breathing world that people forget about. Before that, it was sort of like, Jungle Hunt, okay. There's somewhat of a world there. We're not talking expansive world with secrets and going underworld and underground. And then Doom, not the first, again, first-person shooter, but really had the biggest impact by far, way more than even Wolfenstein 3D did. And then, of course, World of Warcraft, we spoke about before. So, no, great list. I don't have a problem with this at all. It looks like the final selections will be made on the advice of journalists, scholars, and other individuals familiar with the history of video games and their role in society. Come on, Colin, Pat, and Ian. It's like the Hall of Fame. You know, they get sports writers and they get the Veterans Committee. We can be the Veterans Committee, can't we? You know, we'll be like, we'll figure out there's a game that was cheating, but then 20 years later, like the Veterans Committee, maybe you can vote on them or not.
Right.
Kick him out. So Barry Bonds, you're not getting in from the sports writers. Maybe 20 years from now, the veterans will let you in, but probably not because they're harder on you. Anyway.
I just want to briefly mention the Mega Man Digital Collection.
Digital.
And I'll come right out and say that I'm pretty excited for it because a lot of people are 50-50, but I'll get into that. So it recollects the first six Mega Man games. So it collects the NES series of Mega Man games.
Uh-huh.
They are not using emulation. They are basically recoding it natively so that it runs better on current hardware.
It's going to be on PS4,
yes,
Windows, Xbox One, and a 3DS release to follow in the winter. Coming out this summer on the other ones.
So it's going to run better and look better, even though they're not really changing the graphics, but what you will get is 1080p resolution and things like that.
How is that possible? I'm just going to ask, but okay.
I don't know.
It's 256 times 240 resolution. How do they? You can't blow up resolution, but whatever. Only you can do is smooth out the pixels if you wanted to.
Well, they're probably doing that too. All I know is that all the video I saw of it looked really good running on whatever it was running on. But it's six good Mega Man games, and yes, you have bought them time and time again. However, there are people like me who didn't buy the re-releases for the 3DS. I've long lost my Mega Man collection, and I would like to play these again. For $15, that's not bad, and I say that because it's not even so much the games that I'm excited about. It is the tons and tons of art documents and design documents that they're including
in-game
with it.
In-game museum.
Yes, and all of the challenges look really cool. So I watched a little bit of streaming today of it, actually. I just happened upon a link, and I clicked it, and I watched a little, like, 10 minutes of people streaming it at E3, and they're talking about how, well, okay, since it's not, it's going to be basically exactly the same as the original games, but there's probably going to be enough minor, tiny, tiny differences that speedrunners aren't going to love it. So what they did was, is they added in this whole slew of challenges, like boss rush modes for each one. There's modes where you just learn how to fight the Yellow Devil one-on-one, and all sorts of these, like, timed challenges. And they're all timed, and you post your best scores. So you get all these...
leaderboards.
So to
video replays. That's a cool idea.
So to sidestep this whole, well, maybe speedrunners won't want to speedrun these games because the Mega Man 1 through 6, they're really popular with speedrunners. They give you a whole new reason to play it because they're giving you a whole new set of challenges to speedrun. On top of the fact that it has the museum and all the soundtracks and stuff. So, I mean, the extra stuff alone is pretty enticing to me.
This is exactly, whenever we spoke about before with the Rare replay, this is where I'm at with these re-releases. I always get on the Nintendo eShop, Wii Shop, whatever, for charging $6 to $8 for like an N64 game or Super Nintendo game or whatever. $3 per game, and this is cheaper than $3, is extremely reasonable, and that's where my price point should be at older games that you're basically slapping a new paint of coat on and putting out there. Because you'll sell the hell out of them.
Sure.
For $15, you know what? You have me interested in this, and I'm not
and you don't even like Mega Man.
No, but the fact that they're putting... the price point works. Six games, challenge mode, video replay, that's really cool that you can probably see other people's highlights. Like,
yeah.
That's just good. That's just... It's just thought out.
I got to hand it to Capcom. That's way more thought out than I would have expected from them.
You know, you canceled like 18 Mega Man games, but you're giving us this. So the Mega Man fans are there. You'll be happy about it, you know.
I'll play the hell
now,
out of it.
Is there a version for $9? I only get the first three games. That's what I'm looking for. Fuck the last three. But okay.
you don't even like three.
No, this is cool. This is where you're at. So if this does well, if this does well enough, will this mean a new Mega Man game, you think? Or Capcom's be like, no.
Capcom's just
program crazy. Something new? Are you crazy?
No. We're working on Street Fighter V. That's all we got time for.
Street Fighter V Ultimate 01 Edition.
Street Fighter V hasn't come out at all yet.
So that's a year away. It'll be the Ultra Magnum Edition. Special...
It's not a new... It has a...
Special Rainbow Bright version?
It hasn't come out. It's a new game.
Oh, okay.
It's not four. Q&A time. Q&A. Gosh darn.
By the way, guys, we did get stuff in the mail. We didn't have time this week. We are going to open it up in 2 weeks from now.
Pat's being really nice. I'm a jackass and left one of the packages at work, so.
Well, I'm nice to Ian every day. But if you want to send this stuff to the CU Podcast, it is Pat Contry. CU Podcast, care of Pat Contry, P.O. Box 7695, San Diego, California, 92167, and we'll open it up on the show in the future. This is from at Dave Van Dam Net. Could be my best, my most favorite Twitter name.
This is my favorite question of all time, too.
Should we use the standard CU Podcast Topics hashtag? Why, yes, you should.
Please understand.
And on Twitter. I understand on Facebook. You guys hate me for not checking. But do you understand that Facebook is so goddamn cumbersome to use? And plus, it's both me and Ian checking on the fly. I don't want it to go through Facebook and scroll down and look for stuff. I just don't like it. And plus, it helps spread the word of the CU Podcast on Twitter via CU Podcast Topics for that hashtag. But if you want to talk about the podcast on its own, sure, use the regular CU Podcast hashtag. Is that enough advertisement?
I have dinosaur hands. Blue Jester. What was the first video game ending you remember being disappointed with? I don't even have to think about that. Rampage. My buddy and I spent 4.5 hours fucking beating Rampage when we were like 10 or 11. And holy shit, at the end you just get the picture of the map and they fall down and it says congratulations. And you see Lizzie and George and then the credits roll. And it's the first time I remember being like, oh my, yeah, that's the first time I was trolled. I was like, we didn't play outside for this?
Be sure to drink your Ovaltine. I remember, I was disappointed. I love it more and more as time goes on, but probably because I saved up, you know, allowance for 9 months to buy it, but Three Stooges. Simple one-screen ending. And, you know, I didn't get the best ending until I was older. I saved that orphanage. Didn't get enough for repairs or to get married to the three broads, but I would save that orphanage, but that was it. It was like no funny quip from Larry, Moe, or Curly. It was sort of like, oh, that was $60 for that Electronic Boutique well spent. And this is $60 in $1989, remember. That's like $120 for a kid. That's like, you're going to cry when that happens. So, other than that, it's hard to remember as a kid, because honestly, a lot of the NES games I didn't beat, because a lot of them that I rented, I couldn't beat in a weekend, or if I did, it was like, crappy endings. But, you know, I had no problem with the Legend of Zelda endings. I thought they were fine. I thought they were good. They gave me satisfaction. Even the Super Mario Brothers one
short,
was fine.
Sweet, just perfectly okay. I mean, I can't really comment on any modern endings because I don't fucking beat any of the games that I play.
I haven't beaten Mario Kart 8 yet. Oh no, I have. Yeah, you get the little credits, which is fine.
King of Fighters 12. I mean, but that was a botched job and a half. There is no endings. I mean, King of Fighters relies on its story so much, and there was no endings in 12. It's like, oh yeah, SNK is broke. Nick Beisel.
At Filmy's Nick.
How often do you go back to games you've beaten previously, whether for nostalgia or just pure enjoyment? So I actually like that one.
We chose it for the podcast, so I hope you like that question.
Well, I don't remember choosing it. Well, that's magically appeared.
That's why you hired me. I think this is like almost like comfort food. Mm-hmm. You want to go back and play Contra because you know it inside out. It just feels good. It gives you that warm feeling of just running through that game and spread fire in the hell out of those bastards. But the ones today I go back to, they're probably, I hate to say it, the ones that either will be quick for me to get through again or ones that I'll play for like 10 minutes and be like, just get recapture that feeling again. Whether it's Mike Tyson's punch-out roll through the first three guys, beat Piston Honda. There you go. That feels good just to do that again. Otherwise, it's tough for me to do that because I don't have a lot of time to play games for pleasure anymore. So I don't know if you want to throw out a few that you like to go back to, besides Rampage.
No, there's I can pick three games real easily that I'd like to go back to quite a bit. Actually, there's a fourth one that I kind of has snuck its way in recent years. DuckTales is definitely one that I go back to all the time. Jet Set Radio is one that I've beaten more times than I can count. And then Killer 7 is one of my favorites of all time as well. I've beaten that quite a number of times. I buy basically every copy that comes into Luna, and then I usually give them away to friends. And then El Shaddai, pretty little known, weird 3D beat-em-up for the PS3 and the 360, loosely based on the Book of Enoch, which is a non-canonical book of the Bible.
Apocrypha.
In which Satan is played by a guy in a fancy suit and a cell phone, and he's your friend, and he's the save point, because he's not evil yet. And it is just a graphically mind-blowing game, and much like Killer 7, I like going back to these games that have these really unclear stories, because I pick up or notice new things every time. So those are a lot of games that I go back to pretty frequently. On the Nintendo, I also really like all the Disney games, basically. strangely, are games that I will go back to a bunch.
And strangely, you love Disney.
I'm not a huge Disney property fan. I just like the park, but the games are fantastic.
You have to like the properties if you go to the park a lot.
I guess I do to a degree, but I can't tell you the last time I watched a Disney show or a Disney movie.
Now, I'm looking at Paperboy is a game that I like. That's like a comfort game to me, Paperboy.
That's a good one. And Mappyland is a real... Jesus Christ. City Connection?
Oh, yeah.
City Connection I can play forever.
We'll just run down the NES library.
And Mappyland. Those are two games that I can just play forever, too. All right, so that's my big bowl of mashed potatoes.
And you know, I'll throw in a little Danny, of course.
Little Danny. Hey, Pat, Paul.
Hi, Paul. Kanacha.
Hey, Pat. How much improv are in your videos? Any examples you can share?
This is, it's tough just because, I was talking about Pat the NES Punk videos, which there will be a new one coming out. I do work those into the rotation, believe it or not. I have shot one. Just got to edit it. It's interesting because it's scripted, but there's times when I'm shooting and then I will stumble upon something that seems better. Usually when I'm with someone like Frank, or if I shot with you, you haven't been in one in 2 years. You're overdue. You're way overdue to be in a video. Or with James, we'll discover something and write it in and it'll be funny. So, for example, the entire combat exchange that I did with James in the Nintendo World Championships video back from 2011. Holy crap, that's a long time ago. That was improv at first, and then we said, okay, that's funny. Let's expand that, and this is how it should work. So it's not necessarily improv directly. It's more like stumbling upon a good idea that's funny, and then quickly in your head at least writing it as something, okay, let's redo that.
You hit it in a take, and then you make it. You flesh it out and then you do it.
Yes.
You do
so,
it for real.
Yes. So if we're talking about something like video game years where me and Ian are fucking goofballs, 99% of that is off the cuff just because we're just...
I would add a 0.9.
There's been,
that.
But there has been times, for the example, where it's not pre-planned, but we'll say something funny.
Yeah.
That was, okay, that was funny. So let's just redo that again and clean it up, and it's funny.
Right.
But it's still not pre-written. It's just that we sort of... It still, I guess, is improv to an extent, even if you...
It's accidental.
It's accidental creativity. It's not fucking stoic, oh, I'm going to say a line. I'm going to look at my partner. This is natural.
Yeah.
Say your line back to me, and then I'll come back. I'm going to say my line and go on and demand I keep it in the video.
Oh. Shots.
What's that? At Chris Sopshitz!
If someone asked 10-year-old Pat or Ian what they wanted to be when they grew up, what would it have been?
I wanted to be... You know what? If I go back home to New Jersey, or it might be somewhere in my garage, there's a picture of me drawing myself 6 years old in a suit shooting an Uzi at a robber because I wanted to be an FBI agent. Swear to God.
mine were a lot different than that. I think my first memory of, like, you know, because they ask you that sort of thing, like, in school, you know,
yes.
It's like a little project.
4 years old, 5 years
yeah,
old?
Yeah, I think the first thing I ever said, I swear to God I remember it because I remember drawing, like, a zebra. I said I wanted to be a zookeeper. I wanted to be a zookeeper. And
love
then,
animals.
But in... I wanted to take care of animals. But when I was 10... to answer the question directly, at the age of 10, I firmly wanted my future career to be a cartoonist. By the time I was 13, I firmly realized that I couldn't draw for fucking shit. So I abandoned that one.
You know what's funny is that it didn't really morph after that. It was always just FBI agent, FBI agent, and sort of blank. I didn't really, in my teenage years, have anything I wanted to be, which probably was good and bad because I didn't really have a focus. I was sort of a jack of all trades, which is what I kind of am now. Besides always liking to write. FBI agent, it was literally me drawing a guy shooting, I even drew the bullet going after the robber with the bag of money. Nowadays, if you drew that, you get in trouble because you can't draw a guy with a gun because you're going to shoot up the school or something. Okay. And then at N. Korwowski, what games do you wish you had as a kid? And I guess meant ones that you didn't have, but you wish for Nintendo Power. I really, really wanted Super Mario Brothers 2. Like, I'm talking, like, the Christmas I asked for Zelda 2, I asked for Zelda 2 and Super Mario 2. And it was strange because just that I ended up getting Zelda 2, which is the horrific story of it arriving 4 months later and me crying every day because Sears somehow couldn't get it to me until April. Anyway, but Super Mario 2 I even enjoyed probably even more than Zelda 2, even though I love Zelda 2 as well. But Super Mario 2, I remember renting that game at least 4 or 5 times as a kid. Wasn't that good at it as a kid. Probably couldn't get past the fourth world as a kid. Nowadays, can beat it. Then I couldn't. But I just love Super Mario Brothers 2 with all my heart. And that was probably the biggest game that I should have owned and didn't as a kid. That and probably Ninja Gaiden, but Ninja Gaiden used to always borrow from my friend or rent it. So that sort of filled it. But Super Mario 2 was the one that I would always want to re-read.
You know what? It's funny. I can think of three. And it was... Mario 2 was one of them. Somehow, we skipped that one. And I remember renting it, and I liked it. But my parents played video games at the time, too. And I don't think they particularly cared for Mario 2. Maybe it was just too different for them. So that was actually a game that I didn't get until I started buying games again for myself.
Okay.
The other one, I actually mentioned it earlier as a comfort game, was Mappy Land. I rented Mappy Land a billion times as a kid, but never got it. And, I mean, I can't imagine that it was widely available in stores, you know, I mean, by the time that I discovered it and liked it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you gotta understand, I mean, just like modern day, you know, a smaller title comes out, you don't buy it within the first 6 months of its release, it becomes harder to find. So, you know, even though my parents obviously saw that I kept renting this one game, I didn't get that one until I started going to flea markets either. And this is a weird story. Deadly Towers. And the reason why...
What?
Yes. I was always a scared little kid.
That's shocking.
No, it's not.
That's why I said it.
Yeah, I was just trying to cut down your joke. My parents actually bought me Deadly Towers for Christmas one year.
Okay.
But they were like, you know, it's got like vampires and this stuff in it. And I looked at the back and I was like, I don't...
You felt too scared to get it?
They were like, you know, my mom's... Because I was young, and my mom was like, you know, if you think it's going to be too scary, we can exchange it, and you can get a different game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually how I ended up getting Donkey Kong Classics. And I really liked Donkey Kong Classics. Like, I had a blast with it. My parents thought I was weird for picking that one, but I really enjoyed the shit out of it. Not so much Donkey Kong, but I mean, to this day, I think Donkey Kong Jr. is just fantastic. But, you know, on the back of the box, I remember the screenshots of Deadly Towers looking really freaking cool as a kid. And I was always curious about that game. Always growing up, never knew any friends who had it. And, you know, it was pre-internet, pre-people bashing it in magazines or online. And all I was left with was wondering what the hell the game was actually like. Because my mom had a friend who really liked that game. I mean, I actually don't hate that game either. I really don't. But she had a friend who really liked it. So, like, as the years went on, I kept wondering, like, did I make a mistake by not picking this game?
So, no, I think you did fine.
I mean, in general, yes, I did fine. But, you know, I did end up later picking it up. And at first I was like, oh, this is crap. But, you know, after repeated times playing it, I really don't hate that game. I think it's okay.
I guess it's good and bad that... Once you get older, once I got into my teens, I moved over into PC. So whatever game I wanted, I could buy myself.
Yeah.
I used to love going to computer shows. Remember computer shows?
Mm-hmm.
Because computer shows...
Do you remember standalone computer stores that were just, like little tiny one-room ones that were... whatever.
I know, I'm going to cry.
Good old days. Yes.
But computer shows were great, besides all the computer porn you can get when you're 15, 16, and probably shouldn't be able to buy it. The discount on games... I remember buying Privateer 2. I don't think I bought it in the store. I got it like $15 cheaper than retail somehow because they would break up like all the OEM stuff, like the Sound Blaster CD package. They would take the games out illegally and like plop like $10 down or $15. So you're buying $40 games sometimes for $20, $15. It was fantastic. Well, computer show. That's a whole other conversation. I'm getting off topic, but you know.
But at that, just to finish that train of thought, though, unlike. Especially at that point in time, like, I mean, if you took a PC Gamer magazine and held it next to another game magazine, the PC Gamer magazine is this big. Why? Because PCs are starting to explode, mm-hmm. and there's that much more games being pumped out, too. You have way more choice than you did on console, so the prices drop rapidly.
So I'm not sure how what to do the topic, but I think we're gonna have to do a computer show because I used to go to computer shows all the time in the mid to late 90s up to the early 2000s before they unfortunately started to die out.
Buying the shareware from like the CD desks, like the CD tables off to the side.
Oh yeah, but we're talking even past that point. Yeah, we're talking full software that's just somehow 50% cheaper.
Oh, I know. Yeah, because
this is retail. This isn't stolen stuff. Somehow they just got it. And you're like, okay.
Well, it's like they take the software that came with like computer bundles, and they just pull it.
Not the big box version. Maybe the small version. It's like okay,
like the Mist or the...
okay, I'll buy it for $15 instead of $40.
All right, we're done.
Okay, we're done. So if we're gonna be at too many games next week, if in Oaks, Pennsylvania, if you want to come out the 26th or 28th. If you want to buy a ticket and you haven't yet, I have the URL here. I can say it on the podcast because Ryan will love me if I do. Go to toomanygames.com/gamer/NESpunk. And if you use that link and sign up, you show support for me and Ian. We appreciate that. If you want to sign up for Loot Crate, it is lootcrate.com/CU podcast and use promo code Frank to save there.
Get a box of stuff.
Get a box of stuff that you hopefully like. And so we're going to be at Too Many Games, and we'll do some sort of podcast impromptu thing. We're not sure it'll count as a full number in the catalog or not. Might be a 0.5.
Will we cover, like, two topics? Will we just sit on the edge of the stage and informally rap with you?
It could be an hour Q&A with the audience. We'll see. But if not, we'll come back the next Wednesday in 2 weeks for, I believe that'll be the 48th or 49th. And then we're gonna be steamrolling towards the 50th, so we might have announcements for that. So that'll be cool. So, for Ian Ferguson, I am still Pat Contry.
You are.
Temporarily.
For now.
And remember, we're on Stitcher and iTunes. Please subscribe and rate us. That'll help us out there. And, we got a Patreon. It's patreon.com/pixelsickhole. So easy to remember. And you can show our support for us there.
Kisses.
We'll see you later.